Welcome to the Haney Biz Project with Mark Haney. Mark is a serial investorpreneur and the chief dreaming officer of the Haney Biz Companies. He's working tirelessly to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution and share the inspiring stories of the region's most influential leaders. And now, here's Mark Haney.
All right. This is the Haney Biz Project, and you know that we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in Sacramento. But you know, today we have a very special show planned because it's the 16th anniversary of the tragedies of 9/11. But this show is about entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs. And you know, today, Marcus, I don't know that I'm banging today. Usually ask you, are you hanging? Are you banging? Because banging is when we're at our very best. But you know, with all that's happening in America at this moment, with all that's happening at Sacramento right now, I don't know that I'm at my very best today. How you feeling, Marcus?
Yeah, I'm a little rattled as well. You know, we've got a bunch of people getting affected by Hurricane Harvey and upcoming Hurricane Irma. But it's also really challenging to be focused when you have your community getting rattled. Like, we just found out some really dire news earlier.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of Sacramento is grieving now. And, right. And some of you don't know this. You're hearing this show on Saturday, but we actually record this show on Thursday. This is coming to you from Thursday at 1:30. And just a few hours ago, there was a memorial, a tribute to a man who lost his life. He was a 21-year veteran of the Sacramento Sheriffs. Mr. Robert French died in the line of duty just a few days ago, and today he was remembered. And there was a huge recognition of that here in Roseville and in Rockland today. But I just got a text from my good buddy Greg Van Dusen that there was another officer-involved shooting right here in Sacramento just a few hours ago, right as the procession was, in occurrence. And it just, my heart goes out to the people that are grieving today, that have lost a loved one. There were also two California Highway Patrolmen shot in that same officer-involved shooting just a few days ago. And today's guest was supposed to be Johnny Fenner. She is one of the high-ranking members of the California Highway Patrol, and she was going to come on the show today and talk about her career and really, in a special 9/11 show, talk about first responders. And today she's unable to make it because she's grieving. Her friends under her command were wounded in action, and she's also grieving because if one of the members of the law enforcement community goes down, they all feel it in a way.
Absolutely.
And today it's a special 9/11 show, but it's also more special, I think, because of what's happening in Sacramento and what's happening around the country. Marcus, I don't know, you know, 9/11, just thinking back about 9/11 and how it affected you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was in eighth grade when 9/11 happened, and I remember going down to the kitchen, and it was about 7:30 a.m., and saw the TV and the news of an airplane hitting the World Trade Centers, and I didn't even know really what that meant or what the, you know, impact was going to be for our nation. But that day, after going to school and in every class, all we did was watch the news. I really learned what being a patriot is all about on 9/11, 16 years ago.
Yeah, well, you joined the Marines, and you obviously served in a time of war. And I think that kind of, I would say that leaves all Americans thinking, what can I do?
Right.
And I think at a time like today, as a Sacramentan, what can I do? Where these men and women, you, Marcus, fall into this category. You have risked your life trying to make this a place where the rest of us can build small businesses and or chase whatever dreams we might have. And we would not have that if it were not for the men and women in uniform. So I got to thank you at a time like this, Marcus. But, you know, coming up in the show today, we have guests that we need to give some gratitude to as well. And we'll dive a little bit deeper into their psyche, what makes them tick. Today, coming up in the show later, we'll have Detectives Rick and Rita Cobb, my friends from Southern California, the dynamic crime-fighting duo of Riverside. One locks up the murderers, and the other puts the sex offenders behind bars. But also later in the show, we're going to meet Dan Bout, a man who has been keeping California safe. Dan is the Assistant Director of Response for the California Office of Emergency Services. But coming up after the break, we will meet an American hero. He is the Lieutenant Colonel of the California National Guard and has just returned from a rescue mission for Hurricane Harvey. Mr. Tom Keegan is in the house. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, brought to you courtesy of Five Star Bank. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Now, back to the Haney Biz Project with host Mark Haney.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Sun System Technology. I'm Mark Haney. And today I am joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tom Keegan of the California National Guard. You just got back from Houston. Is that correct?
Correct. We were working out of Fort Hood, but we were providing support to Houston, Beaumont, and I think it was Port Arthur. It was another town down there in southeast Texas.
Can you give us an idea of the devastation that's happening right now in Houston? And then also, we've got more storms coming in with Irma on the way. What's it look like today? Now, this is Thursday, so if you're hearing this out there, know that this is Thursday at 1:30.
Right. So, well, hopefully, you know, the floodwaters, at least in the Houston, southeast Texas area, are residing a bit, and folks can maybe start doing some more assessments, and hopefully they're not in as much peril as they were immediately following the devastation that was Harvey. But when I was down there, you know, looking at it from a helicopter pilot's perspective, much of the town was underwater.
Wow.
Not just in Houston, but and it was across, you know, all aspects, from, you know, million-dollar homes to, you know, trailer parks to motels to business malls. Everybody was affected equally. And so it was really touching to see, you know, the response and how folks kind of rallied around that and just, you know, took up whatever they had to save their neighbors, to work together and help out.
And when you think about what's happening right now in Sacramento, right, today's the anniversary of, not today, this week is the anniversary of 9/11, and this is a special tribute to the first responders and the people that do so much to keep us safe in the homeland. But there's been some devastation right here in Sacramento with some officer-involved shooting and obviously the death of a Sacramento sheriff. And it makes me wonder, as a civilian, what could I do? I always think, what could I do, and how could I say thank you to guys like yourself who are putting your life on the line for the rest of us? How do we say thanks?
I think it's just the acknowledgement. It's just simply that, right? Acknowledging their presence. If you see a police officer in uniform or firefighter in uniform, service member, right? Just, you know, take a half a second, you know, look them in the eye and say thanks. I don't think they want anything more than that or less than that, but it sometimes that's all they need to get through the day, right? It helps them stay motivated.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously you guys are motivated every day, the kinds of things that you see every day and our law enforcement sees every day. It's usually, you know, especially in law enforcement, people are called on when people are either sad, mad, or, you know, it's a bad day when you get called in. But for you today, you live here in Sacramento. I want to get a background of your career, because you have you're more than just a guy that flew into Houston to help out with the victims of Houston. Can you give us an overview of your career and how it spanned over the years?
Sure. Yeah. I'm real lucky. I'm a local boy. Grew up in Carmichael. I went to Del Campo. Went in the Marines after working on A-4 Skyhawks and in aviation in the Marines for 4 years. I got out. I went to college, went in the Army, started flying helicopters, got a commission in the Army,
nice.
Flew for about 10 years. And then about 12, 14 years ago, I went over to the Air Force and started flying combat search and rescue missions.
Couldn't get enough, huh?
You know, it was just a calling, you know. It was the next thing. It was the next thing in line for me, and so it just worked out really good. Timing was great, and you know, I was lucky enough to be a part of an amazing unit out of Moffett Field in San Jose, the 129th Rescue Wing, and you know, the men and women down there do great stuff, and I'm really lucky to be a part of it and be a part of their group.
Where were you at 9/11?
So I was my wife and I. I just bought a place up in Folsom, and I was driving into work to Mather. I was in the Army then, flying counter-narcotic missions
Wow.
For the Army out of Mather Air Force Base. And I heard the news as I was driving in, and my wife called me right about the same time I had heard it because she was watching it on the TV. And so we spoke about it, got to work, and we didn't fly that day. But the very next day, it was really eerie. I went out on some missions, but nothing else was flying. So I was flying, and the only people that I was talking to instead of other air traffic were just a couple of air traffic controllers at the different airports or airports that I was passing through. So it was really weird to kind of see kind of that silence and that still in our national airspaces.
How did that affect you and maybe the trajectory of your career?
Well, you know, I think it took a little bit to set in on how it was going to affect the country first, right? And then how, you know, the country was going to respond, and then ultimately how that was going to affect, you know, service members in the DOD and you know, what was going to entail. Because up until that part, you know, my whole career, had been, for the most part, a peacetime, you know, military. We'd done some deployments, I think, to the Balkans, to Bosnia and things like
that. Wow.
But we hadn't done, you know, any real kinetic operations like we've seen, you know, recent in, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Africa. So it's changed quite a bit, and it's changed our lives quite a bit. But, you know, it was part of my life. It's what I had done to that point. And so it was like, no doubt, I'll keep doing it as long as they'll have me.
Well, you deployed to war zone. You deployed to Afghanistan. You deployed in areas that put you in harm's way. Can you give us just an overview of what that looked like? And maybe there's a story that has affected you that might be helpful to the rest of us.
You know, all I could say is, you know, it's humbling, right, to be able to I fly search and rescue helicopters, and sometimes I do it in combat. And to be a part of a team that can go out and save folks that are in need is really it's great. And, you know, I serve because, you know, my wife allows me to, first off, right? Mm-hmm. And I love it, right? So I'll do it as long as they'll have me, as long as she'll let me do it and the family will let me keep going. But it's really humbling to be able to give back to all the, you know, young men and women that are on the ground out there, you know, doing the work for our country, right? To be able to go pick them up, you know, when they're down at, you know, feeling down and they're at their worst. So
you're picking up guys that are have been wounded.
IEDs, we're in the middle of troops in context or TICs. You know, oftentimes we're doing it at night under, you know, night vision goggles, landing to really obscure locations, brownout landings. And, it, you know, after a while, you just, I don't say you get numb to it, but you realize that, you know, the folks on the ground need you more, right, than anything. So we always go. That's our motto, right? These things we do that others may live. And those things that we do is we go. And we stick our nose in, and we do our best to get whoever's on the ground out, keep them alive, and get them to a surgeon so they can fight another day.
Yeah. What kind of toll does that take on your wife? And you've got children.
You know, they're pretty resilient, right? And I'm lucky. But I think it's part of the, you know, that's that dynamic. Our relationship is such, and I say that I'm allowed to serve because, you know, she lets me, but it really is. It's a partnership, and she knows, and she's a part of it, and she serves as much as I serve, right? Because she's a single parent back home here while I'm deployed.
Because you're deployed for months at a time.
You bet. And so, you know, we've got 20,000 soldiers and airmen in the California National Guard that do the same thing, right? You know, all the time. Currently, we've got soldiers deployed to Jordan. We've got soldiers that are going to Afghanistan. We've got folks that are leaving tomorrow to go down to support Irma in Florida. Just got back from Harvey. We've got folks out fighting fire with helicopters. We've got 6 helicopter crews deployed here in our state.
Wow.
250 soldiers of the California Army National Guard are out on the fire lines, arriving on the fire lines today to work with Cal Fire, with OES, and help put out those fires and protect, you know, property and people and their livestock here in California. So it's an amazing organization. It's great to be a part of.
Well, you, in a just a matter of hours or days, are going to Florida to find out or to help on what's going on with Irma.
Correct. So my unit, the 129th, hopefully, all things working out, they'll get on some C-17s and fly down to northern Florida tomorrow to be in a position to support Floridians when Irma strikes. So.
And just in perspective, so the rest of us can understand, when you get ready to go do something like that, what kind of emotion goes through your head when you're saying, I'm going to go in, and this could be the worst storm in American history is what they're saying. Is it trepidation? Is it excitement? What kind of mood are you in when you get ready to go do something like this?
Well, I think for the younger guys and gals, it's probably that excitement. For me, it's just the planning. Okay, what did we forget? Let's look at the last debrief and the last AAR, after action review. You know, look at the lessons learned from the last one, make sure that we don't make any mistakes that we made in the last time. So, you know, having some compassion for the folks on the ground, making sure that we're doing that right and taking care of all those folks while we're over there. And again, you know, just we can't afford to make mistakes that we've made in the past. So that's my thing as a leader, is make sure that we're there with the gear we need in the spot, you know, right time, place, manner to provide support.
Tom Keegan, I want to thank you for what you do for our country, what you've done in the past, and really what you continue to do, and for joining us on the show today. Very insightful, and I think it gives us all a little bit more perspective as we face this challenging time right here in Sacramento and right here in the good old U.S. of A. When we return, we're going to have Dan Bout joining us. Dan is the Assistant Director for the Response for the California Office of Emergency Services. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com. By our sponsor, Rockland Audi, this is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to Mark Haney, igniting the entrepreneurial revolution with the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Hub International. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am here with Dan Bout, the Assistant Director for Response for the California Office of Emergency Services. And we need you today, Dan. We've got some emergencies happening in this country. They're happening in Sacramento, but even more broadly, all over California. What's going on right now in California that's right, I guess, in the middle of your radar?
So, well, there's a host of incidents. I think the one that's on the forefront right now are the wildfires we have. So across the state, we have a number of major wildfires. Tom Keegan mentioned, you know, the California National Guard is providing that aviation support in support of Cal Fire. And so, you know, throughout the state, you have these fires. Some of them are happening deep in, you know, in the woods. Essentially, they don't have a lot of impacts, but many of these are burning close to our communities, right? And so as soon as one of these wildfires creeps into an area where it starts putting homes and property mm-hmm. at risk, that obviously raises its profile, how we allocate assets against those fires. And so those are burning, again, up and down the state. We have some tropical moisture that's coming in that's causing a lot of lightning strikes.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that starts more of these fires as we go along. And then of course, we have the incident, the unfortunate incident you referenced in Sacramento, where we lost an officer earlier this week, and we're doing a memorial for that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the fire situation first. Where are the hot spots today, and what do we expect moving forward? Is there any way to predict what's going to happen?
Well, we're fortunate in that Cal Fire and the U.S. Forest Service have incredible modelers. So what they're doing is they're looking at, you know, where the winds are, they're looking at the weather, and they're kind of forecasting based on all these different factors where they think the fire will go. Now, fire is pretty inherently unpredictable. A lot of time it's creating its own weather, and so it'll jump containment lines, it'll move into areas that we thought we had good containment on, or it'll move in directions we didn't anticipate. And so it changes on a day-by-day, if not hour-by-hour basis.
You know, today being, or this week being the anniversary of 9/11, it makes me think about my friends who are in the fire service, and I know some of them spent some time in the military, and then have gone on to become firefighters, and so many people were influenced by 9/11 to go out and join the Marines, join the Army, become a firefighter. How do you think 9/11 has changed things for America?
Well, I mean, I think it changed enormously. I mean, you mentioned there's a lot of people who had a sense of calling to help our country, right? And that expressed itself a lot of times with joining the armed services. But a lot of times there were people who became first responders because they looked at those heroes in the aftermath of what happened in New York and the Pentagon, And they said, you know, that this means something to me, right? This person's life has meaning. They made a difference, and I want to be part of that community. And so there's an enormous amount of first responders that, you know, really felt that first calling when they saw the aftermath.
Well, I think a lot of that's when I saw America come together. We're watching this on the news, my son and I, as I'm getting ready to take him to school, and he ended up joining the Marines. But I remember that time being a time when America came together, and it just makes me, and then now you see us maybe separating in some ways and for certain reasons. And I'm wondering, what can we do as ordinary citizens? Obviously, you have a huge influence in bringing people together, but what can we do to bring people together? Does it really take tragedy to bring people together?
Wow, that's, I don't know that it takes a tragedy to do it, but you know, anytime you have these precipitating events, something where people really question what has value to me, right? That's when you start to see this. I mean, it happened in Harvey, and I'm sure it's happening right now in Florida. People band together when they have, like, you know, something that a reason to band together. Mm-hmm. And short of that, a lot of times you don't see that quite as much. You know, you'll see the cliques form, and like, I mean, just it's a lot of times very similar to grade school, right? People will hang around the people that they meet, they know, and it's not they're trying to exclude anyone. It's just their circles relatively, associated with their immediate interests.
Well, how would you compare what's going on in California and the kinds of disasters that we face, I guess natural disasters when it comes to fire, earthquake? How would you compare that to the devastation that other states might see? Obviously, what's going on right now with Harvey and Irma is off the charts. That's at level 10 in terms of a nightmare, I suppose. But how does California stack up to that in terms of natural disaster and emergency needs?
Right. So, I mean, most of what you see is the emergency management infrastructure, right? So what we would call the incident command system. So the DNA for how we respond, not just in the United States, but internationally, started here in California because we had such an enormous wildfire threat because the kind of incidents we face, whether they be catastrophic earthquakes or catastrophic flooding, are of such a magnitude that we have to kind of have these rules for how people will coordinate in large disasters. So from the framework of capabilities, we have, I would argue, the best capabilities in the world. But again, to match that, we have these threats. You know, unlike what we're seeing with the hurricanes, where you have multiple days of notice, when our earthquakes hit, we won't have but a few seconds of notification. And so that's a whole different dynamic because you have no time to prepare other than what you put into practice beforehand.
What is preparation? So there's no way to prepare for an earthquake, I take it. But what about fire? Is there a way to prepare for fire?
Well, I should be clear. There actually are things you can do, right?
Okay. So,
and these are things that are easy to miss. But things like having a kit at home, right? Talking with your children about, hey, here's what we're going to do if a disaster happens. Making sure you talk to your daycare provider or school and know, hey, if this happens, right, if we have an earthquake, if there's a scenario and I can't contact the school, where are the children? What's their safe area? What's the procedure to pick them up? And a lot of times parents, you know, they assume that, well, the school saw through it, and assuredly they have. But if you don't know that answer, and now you can't call your school because the phone lines are down, now you're in a panic situation, right?
You need a
plan. You're not thinking at your best, right? And so, yeah, like anything, you want to have a plan beforehand. You want to have thought through at least, here's what we're going to do. And now you don't feel that like pit of your stomach, like I'm unprepared when it happens.
Well, let's talk about the overarching career that you have, Dan. You're also an Army Lieutenant Colonel, right? You're in the reserves. Talk to us about that and maybe just how your career, what inspired you to take on this role of helping out our community, helping out our country?
So so I joined back in the 90s, and I enlisted in the active duty Army initially just because I needed college money. I was like, hey, this is great. You know, you see the kind of the commercials and, you know, rappelling out of helicopters.
Yeah,
I'm like,
looks
that's
fun.
What I'm gonna do.
You're an athlete.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I joined, and it kind of became a little bit of a calling. I really appreciate it. I like being with the infantrymen down in the dirt. I had a couple deployments on active duty. But at the time, these weren't combat deployments. It was like Bosnia-Herzegovina. And then I left active service because I wanted to finish graduate school. That's why I enlisted in the first place. And so when 9/11 happened, I was just a newly commissioned officer now in the infantry. and I was teaching graduate courses at UC Davis. So
you're a newly commissioned officer in the infantry and you're teaching classes at UC Davis.
Right.
Okay. So talk to us about what happened from there.
So I was in their doctoral program. And so the first thing I did was, you know, I basically called in and said, hey, I can't teach class today. So I was a active guardsman. I reported to the headquarters and said, okay, so, you know, where are you sending me? Because I was so used to active duty. And actually, there was a host of missions that the guard was filling, right, for homeland security type functions. And so they found one of those, and I took a time off from school. And actually only took about a month off. So I was scheduled for deployment. This was in the spin-up prior to the actual war.
Okay.
I had about 2 or 3 months. So, you know, I remember when I went into course, there's a lot of questions, you know, oh, where were you for the first month? And it was a little interesting because we're still in that period where people really didn't realize how disconnected they were from the military. So, mm-hmm. you know, I had students asking me like, they're like, okay, so you're a ranger? I was like, yeah, absolutely. And they're like, well, what national park? Because there was just this absolute disconnect from.
I'm special forces, sir.
Right. So it was an interesting time because there was such a, the military had been a very much an afterthought until this all happened in many people's lives.
You know, today's an interesting show. And we got to wrap it up, but I have to thank you, Dan, for sharing your story. We got it cut off short because we have Rick and Rita Cobb coming up, detectives from Riverside. But it just shows me. In talking to you, and I think it tells our audience, you know, you guys are just normal guys. You put your pants on one leg at a time, yet you put your life on the line. You're out there, you know, when the phone rings and there's an emergency, somebody's got to answer that phone. And I want to thank you for being one of those guys. And thanks for coming on the show today. When we return again, we'll have Rick and Rita Cobb, two detectives from Riverside. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com. Brought to you courtesy of the Entrepreneurs Organization of Sacramento and law firm Greenberg Traurig. This is the Haney Biz Project.
And now back to the Haney Biz Project with investorpreneur Mark Haney.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you by Sun System Technology. I'm Mark Haney, and I am here with my good friends, Rick and Rita Cobb. They are Riverside's finest. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
Good.
Good, good. Now, I appreciate you coming down. You're in town. We're hanging out for the Chris Stapleton concert and for Tom Petty. And you guys have agreed to come in and talk to us a little bit. Right now in Sacramento, we've recently gone through an officer-involved shooting. And you guys, right. As detectives, right? Rick, you're a detective that focuses on the homicide stuff, and Rita, you are sex crimes detective. So, I mean, I want to get an overview of what law enforcement is like for you, but also being empathetic to what's going on right now in Sacramento.
It's basically, it's a life. I mean, even though it's a cliche, law enforcement is our life, especially since we're married, for coming on 25 years now. So everything about our life revolves around law enforcement, whether it be our friends or activities.
Yeah.
So it is. It's just a lifestyle.
Rita, how about you? You are the sex crimes detective of the family. And
yes.
So you guys got you met each other on the job?
We did. We met in the police academy. Rick was in the academy ahead of me.
Okay.
And then once we got out of training, we were beat partners.
Okay, and then so you guys both were interested in law enforcement. It was something that was calling your name. And talk to us about the ascent of your career, because you're now detectives, but you didn't start there.
No, we started in patrol. Every police officer usually starts out in the field. And then you do various jobs. For myself, I was a field training officer. I was a relief observer in our helicopter unit. And then I worked on a specialized team. And then from there, I went to an inside job and got promoted and became a detective. So 19 years ago.
And how did you get recognized to be promoted to the sex crimes unit?
Well, I know, right? I was a brand new detective. And generally, I mean, we're talking back in the late 1990s. So 1999, and new detectives generally went to burglary.
Okay.
But I had this lieutenant who really believed in me and put me in the sex crimes unit. And uh-huh. I remember going to him and telling him, like, hey, I'm new. I should be going to burglary. And he had told me, no, you're going to either sink or swim, and you're not going to sink.
Wow.
And so he threw me in, and that really is the way I look at it. I got thrown into the wolves because I hadn't had any investigative experience, and I had to learn right away. I mean, like, one of my first cases, the first week I was a brand new detective, was a 16-year-old girl that gave birth at home and then dumped her baby over a wall, and a neighbor found it.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, it's kind of like that. Like, what do you do? Where do you start with that?
Wow, the difficult things that you must see. And, you know, for this is on radio. We're not even on Facebook Live today. It will be on YouTube. But now Rick and Rita are attractive 50-year-old people that, you know, kind of that are in great shape. And Rick is, he's the homicide man of the family, right? So Rita described a little bit of her role at Riverside. But Rick, tell us a little bit about what's homicide and how did you get there?
Well, started the same as Rita. Started out in patrol and I worked my way. I was a SWAT team member for quite a while. And then we got promoted just within a month of each. Yeah,
okay.
A week of each other. And I did start the burglary route, but okay. I kind of worked my way up, and I went to the domestic violence unit. I worked in the sex crimes unit for a couple years also, and it's a good stepping stone. I really learned how to interview people and kind of get to that stepping stone where you get to homicide. And then a spot opened up, and the lieutenant really wanted me to put in for it, and I jumped at the chance. And that was 17 years ago.
And when either of you lock on to a case, I know these cases don't last a day or a week necessarily. Sometimes they last for weeks and months or maybe even longer. So you really have to be an investigator, right? These things last forever.
Right. It's not like on TV at all. I mean, we get a homicide and we could run 3 days straight without any sleep. I mean, you could just start from start to finish, and then eventually you have to kind of take a break. But, yeah, these cases can go on forever. I mean, I still got open cases. But even when you're hot on the trail, so to speak, you know, those cases will take you a month, a couple months.
Yeah, and I'm picturing what's happening right now in the families of the victims of these law enforcement officers that were recently shot here in Sacramento. One with the Sac Sheriff is he's passed away.
Right.
And two with the California Highway Patrol are wounded. And I'm just thinking, you guys go into danger as part of your daily life. And, you know, you guys have seen some tragedy, and just thinking what goes through the mind when you hear of a fellow law enforcement officer that has been taken down like that?
Well, no matter where it happens, it goes to heart when you hear something like that, because, as you said, we have had tragedy at our department in Riverside. We've lost quite a few officers in the last 10 years. So, and Rita and I have actually investigated the cases where these officers were killed.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
You see from the family's perspective, you meet with the families, and not just the immediate family, but the law enforcement family. And it's just a horrible thing. I mean, I think you can equate it similar to maybe like the military. When a fellow Marine or soldier gets killed, everybody feels it.
You bet.
And that's how it is in law enforcement.
And, you know, Rita, you know, being both police officers, being both detectives in Riverside, it makes me still wonder what it's like to be the spouse of somebody who's in danger. Rick must feel that when you are out on a dangerous mission. And I know you've got to feel that when Rick is doing one of his investigations, when you know that he's putting his life on the line.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a different situation because both of us are in the field, where I think it would be different if I was not in law enforcement. I think I might be more fearful for
okay.
him. But I do really trust his instincts and his tactics, and I believe that Rick is really safe. And so, I mean, if it's his time, I mean, I truly believe that if it's your time, there's nothing you can do about it. But for the times where Rick has been out at SWAT or things like that, I mean, there have been times where I was anxious, I would say, and I was waiting for that text or the call or the page, depending on the year, to know that he was okay.
Yes.
But I would say for the most part, I really believe that he's really divinely guided and that he, you know, the times that he goes out there, that he's going to be safe.
Well, there was a time, we were just talking about this, right after you had Kelly, that Rick got himself into a scuffle in front of the hospital. Rick, what happened with that fight?
There were two guys outside the hospital.
You were on duty.
I was on duty.
Okay.
This was back when I was a patrol officer.
Okay.
And two guys basically wanted to get into the hospital, and they weren't allowed to. And I showed up, and immediately one of them just attack me. Just so him and I were kind of fighting, and then his buddy jumped in. And at that point, he got the better of me. He got me on top, put me in a bear hug, and slammed me right to the ground. So I'm on my back. He's on the top. And then I'm expecting a fight, a real man fight. He starts biting me. I mean, he bit my eyebrow off.
Oh my gosh!
And he's headbutting me and biting me, and I thought,
"You're not able to pull out your gun and shoot him."
No, yeah. The way my hands were pinned, I couldn't get to my gun. I had a backup gun. I was trying to get to. So at the time, the only thing I could think of was use my thumb, and I put my thumb right through his eyeball.
Oh, and, okay. That slowed him down a little bit.
That worked
quite
a bit. It worked real well. And he finally got off of me, and then thank goodness a security guard came up and it was actually able to help him, because at this point I was covered in blood from my forehead, you know, running all my whole face was covered in blood. I couldn't see. So it was a real hairy situation. I'm really glad I was able to do that, and then really glad the security showed up when they did.
You bet. Well, you know, what might seem like a simple day at the office. I'm out in front of the hospital helping keep the parking lot or the emergency area safe and calm, and you get attacked. And, you know, I think about, the way us civilians feel toward law enforcement. I mean, we really appreciate what you do, but in today's society, you must be feeling that there's obviously a portion of today's society, I call them the crazies, that really aren't showing so much respect today. How does that affect you guys?
Want me to answer?
Yeah,
okay.
Good.
Well, I think we deal with 10% of the population 90% of the time. Mm-hmm. So you have that group of individuals who, no matter what, are never going to like you. Right, they're never going to be. They call you all the time, but they're not going to be the ones that actually like you and appreciate you. But 90% of the population, maybe it's less than that at the moment, does appreciate you, and they only call law enforcement for really serious things. So I think how we look at it is that you can't judge the majority of the population by those that are the loudest at the moment, because really it's those other individuals that you get phone calls or you get cards in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes.
I tell you, more and more right now in the last few years, with all the, if you want to call it hatred towards the police or the disrespect towards the police, we get a lot more people thanking us. They'll buy us a coffee at Starbucks or if I'm sitting at lunch, they'll buy a lunch. Or just even we get so much more of the thank you for your service. And usually you only hear that for military, which it should be. But we're getting a lot more of that. So we know. Just like Rita said, we only hear about the minority of people who feel that way towards us, not the majority of the people.
And both of you two are approaching the retirement age. You're not retired yet, but you're on the back nine, so to speak. Just as you look back at your success and the career that you had, if you could describe that in one word, Rick, how would you describe your 25-plus years in law enforcement?
Wow, one word.
I know.
Two words. You go two.
Interesting. I mean, okay. I guess if I had to say one word, but of course you expand that out. But I just we've seen it. I don't want to say seen it all, but you've seen almost all you can, and the highs, the lows. We've been through everything, and it's been an interesting ride.
Never a dull moment. No. Okay, Rita.
I know.
It's your turn, girl.
I was gonna say awesome.
Why awesome?
Because I think that it has been an awesome career. I'm a girl in a man's world, so to speak, and a smaller one, which is interesting, right? Mm-hmm. So I have to be smarter than the bad guy.
Yes.
So I learned early on that I wasn't going to kick anybody's butt. You know, I was going to have to shoot
physically,
him, right? But I was going to put a good fight up. I was going to do my best. I'm going to, you know, do what I can to save myself and anybody else. But that I had to have the gift of gab. I better learn how to talk my way into putting handcuffs on people. And that it's been a great career for me. I've loved it.
Oh, no doubt.
Rick and Rita Cobb, Riverside's finest, thank you for sharing your story with us here in Sacramento as we deal with this very difficult time in our community with the recent shootings. And anyway, thank you. It is always interesting to talk to you guys. Never a dull moment, Rick, and always awesome, Rita, for privileged to be your friend. And I really feel privileged that you're sharing your story right here in Sacramento.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You know, next week on the show, we have Eric Levy coming on. He's the founder and CEO of Luxor One. We do a little sponsor appreciation, Marcus. Who should we be saying thank you to, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. Wanted to give a shout out to Kim Silvers at Silvers HR. Has responsibility for all your HR needs.
Yeah, Kim Silvers is awesome. When we return, we're going to have our takeaways and our closing thoughts about tragedy in America and everything that we're facing right now in Sacramento. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of Ethan Conrad Properties and the financial advisors, Stifel Financial. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back for Mark's takeaways from today's Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Silvers HR. I'm Mark Haney, and today we've been talking about tragedy. And can there be perspective without tragedy? There's some things in life that happen that are unexplainable, but sometimes these tragedies, they force us to find the strength to carry on. Back here with Marcus Haney. Marcus, takeaways.
Those are just two fantastic guests that really put their heart out and their soul out there for the better of the community and for our country, and couldn't ask for two better patriots. So thanks for everything you guys do.
Sacramento is mourning today, has been mourning. Two CHP officers severely wounded, Deputy Robert French with the Sheriff's Department of Sac County, shot and killed in the line of duty. Two other CHP officers shot, which I mentioned, but today, you know, another guy was shot, another Sac City, I guess there was a couple of them, and we just got texted in. The news is still coming in on that. It's Thursday, but anybody going through an unexplainable tragedy, I would just say maybe they're in a better perspective, better position to gain perspective. And I'm still trying to figure this thing out, but it reminds me of a story about baby Joshua. Baby Joshua's parents, they were so excited to be pregnant with their first child. After 4 months into the pregnancy, they were informed that the baby had a separated heart and he was unlikely to survive the pregnancy. They were told strongly consider an abortion in order to save the baby and the mom. And at first they agreed, but the next day they changed their minds. And the parents were again advised that baby Joshua would not live through the pregnancy. And even if he did, he certainly wouldn't make it through childbirth. Still, they declined the abortion. They were cautioned again and again, but you know what? They decided that they were going to press on through childbirth, and again warned that he'd probably only live for a couple of days. But baby Joshua's parents refused the advice and decided that every moment matters. You see, in his first 16 weeks, someone who loved him held Joshua. Every minute of every hour of those 16 weeks of his life, he was held. Not for one moment was baby Joshua put down. And baby Joshua, he made it through the pregnancy. He made it through childbirth. And you know what? Those parents wouldn't have changed those 16 weeks for anything. Those parents and the loved ones of Joshua, they'll never be the same. And they know better than anybody that every moment matters. And I think as we think about our takeaways for today, Marcus, you think about what's happened here in Sacramento, what's happening right now, with the fires, with around California, what's going on in Texas with Harvey, what's going on with Irma, and what's about to happen. We have to remember that every moment matters. And I just want to do a Sacramento salute to the leaders of hometown patriotism, to Sacramento's finest, to all those fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life, to the 13 stripes and the 50 stars, and to those precious moments of life that are always worth fighting for. Yours. Never above you, never below you. Always by your side.